This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see jodcast.net.
I'm Ben, I'm here with Indy, and we're interviewing a very sleep-deprived Einstein fellow from the University of California, San Diego, Brooke Simmons. Brooke has been involved in the Pulsar Zoo project, which has been launched from Jodrell Bank over the course of Stargazing Live 2016. Brooke, how are you feeling?
Sorry, what time is it?
We don't know either.
I don't. Where am I?
Possibly not quite as late as you. But you've been involved in the Pulsar Zoo project over the course of this week. What's your background, though?
So my background is actually in AGN, active galactic nuclei, which I think your listeners are fairly familiar with.
I think they probably will be. Yeah.
So I actually study black holes and galaxies and how they grow together. And so pulsars are pretty new for me, but citizen science in this university is not. I've been with this universe for several years now. So I'm really interested in this partially because pulsars are awesome, but also because this is a new kind of rapid live analysis that we've started doing with Stargazing Live, and actually it has a lot of other applications, not just astrophysics. There's lots of applications for transients and things in astrophysics. But also I'm working on a disaster relief project with this universe, and we've run some small projects. But that is also live, right? You get an earthquake, say, happens in Nepal, say, this happened last year, and it doesn't matter where you are, if you're driving through the roaming countryside of France, say, because that happened to me too, anyway, and you just go, we have to run a project, so you have to put it all together really quickly, you have to, you know, use the project builder that we have on Zooniverse to make your own citizen science project, we can do that now, and then collect classifications and analyze them within hours. And it doesn't actually matter in some respects whether it's a pulsar, whether it's, you know, Earth observations, where the satellite is pointing is irrelevant. Mm. So that's part of why I'm here. And also, you know, I've been in this universe for a while, and this is a thing that we get to do every year. And I've always had other things that I couldn't be here for, and it always made me really sad. So this year I just sort of informed people that I would be here. And they said, well, yes, if you're willing to write some code and do some data analysis, let's do that.
So the Zooniverse has expanded massively since it's begun. Initially, it was just Galaxy Zoo, and now there's so many projects you can do, as you said, not just related to astrophysics. What has your role been across the evolution of the Zooniverse from the very beginning?
Well, my first role was in Galaxy Zoo as a volunteer, actually. I was a PhD student when that came out, and I was working on AGN host galaxy morphologies, and I remember at some point thinking, you know, I just look at this and I do this, and otherwise I have to fit all these functions to the thing, and it's really tricky and sometimes inaccurate and whatever, and I still have to, wouldn't it be nice if we could, but I never did anything with it, and, you know, so I was, when Galaxy Zoo came out, I went, that's the best idea. Yes, that thing. And so I logged on and did a bunch of classifications. But I didn't really jump into the community because I felt like I shouldn't interfere. Like, I'm a scientist and I don't want to, like, tread over the toes of people who are, you know, the science team. So I just kind of hung back, but was always a fan. And then many years later, I got the opportunity to join the science team. And so, of course, I jumped at it, and it was great and really fun. And it was that was about a year and a half before I got the job at Oxford, which was my previous position to this. So I joined the Zooniverse team officially when I started that. So I've been with the Zooniverse for almost 4 years now. So I initially came in as a Galaxy Zoo science postdoc. But the first thing that you learn when you work with the Zooniverse is just how distracting it is. There's always interesting projects. There's always people coming in who are like, you know, the United Nations wants to meet with you about a potential. And you're like, oh, let's do that then. You know, I can tell them about galaxies. Or, yeah, you know, Brian May is coming by today. Should we show him the gravitational lens project or whatever? Because our PI knows Brian May, and Brian May is an astrophysicist, so why wouldn't you do that, right? And so I got involved in the sort of general organizational stuff and just, you know, thinking a lot about citizen science in general and how you make best use of the efforts that the volunteers give us because they're, you know, really interested in contributing to science, and we want to honor that as much as we can. And then I got involved in running a disaster relief project, and I still do that for some part of my time, but most of it's still astrophysics. I've managed to retain that. So a lot of people in this universe end up, you know, becoming programmers or something, and go off and work for Google or GitHub or something. Several of our best friends in this universe have done that, and they're doing really, really well. So you can do anything you want to in this universe, actually.
How has it grown in terms of the number of people involved in the Zooniverse in terms of postdocs and staff and people actually employed solely to look at Zooniverse projects?
So we've got, I don't know the actual number, but it's in the dozens, like 20 maybe, of total staff who are developers primarily, so people who write our software, which is all open source, by the way. And so they are split between Chicago and Oxford as home base, but actually a lot of them are in various places and come into the office one or two days a week. In terms of postdoc effort, in terms of like science postdoc efforts, I was actually the first science postdoc employed by Galaxy Zoo. We have generally gotten our science done by getting other grants, not from the Zooniverse itself, but from, like, a science team will get a grant to do, you know, the science. Mm-hmm. And then they do a Zooniverse project, but, you know, that's where the money comes from, so they're hired by them. So there haven't been that many science postdocs, actually, in the Zooniverse, which is fine, because the projects are so diverse. Mm-hmm. I mean, and we now have, you know, many, many more projects than we used to, and, you know, we couldn't support that. So it's good that other teams are getting their own science done, basically.
Last night we launched PulsarHunters.org, which mm-hmm. is a brand new addition to the Zooniverse,
right,
where users can search through pulsar data looking for new examples of pulsars. How have you found transferring to pulsar research for the purposes of PulsarHunters.org?
Well, I have a lot to learn about radio astronomy, I'll give you that. I find
so do we in my radio astronomy.
it's little things, too. I mean, I'm an extragalactic astronomer, and so when we've been talking about sharing and positions and figuring out how to tell the difference between interference and a known pulsar that we just got something slightly off and so we didn't realize right away and so forth, they're like, the coordinates are in galactic, and I'm like, oh, right, that's a thing. it's been little things like that, and then larger things like I don't know how to recognize a microwave from a, you know, a plane pulsar, flying over from a pulsar. I don't know how to do that, except for what I've learned over the course of designing this. So that's been really humbling in a way, but still really fun. Mm. And it's good to interface with that. And, you know, it's been fun also to watch our moderators jumping in, because they're likewise, our moderators are really experienced and are actually really good in extragalactic stuff and have been published on some of those papers. Mm. But they are like, okay, pulsars, let's do this. And it's really been fun to watch that too.
So you were here last night for the launch.
Yeah.
We were at the Jodrell Bank Centre for Astrophysics in Manchester behind the scenes of pulsarzoo.org, looking at the candidates that people had flagged as possible pulsars. None of us got any sleep.
Nope.
Really. Give us an idea of how your evening went from start to finish last night.
Well, it was pretty sort of ticking along and like we expected, I'm not going to say slow, because we knew where we were going and exactly what we were doing, and then all of a sudden it was like, it is happening right now. And it was a little bit of a kind of, right, let's not panic exactly, but let's do this. I mean, we knew the launch was coming, and so we were trying to prepare for that and scale all of our servers and things. Of course, you can never quite prepare for that, so you always expect things will go down. We had a bet, actually, in the Zooniverse, and there was a betting board with how many people we thought would log in the first hour, how many classifications we thought we'd get in the first hour, and what was the thing that was going to fail. Because every year it's something, and then you fix that thing, and then the next year something else, and so you make the software better every year, and it's fine. Mm-hmm. And so the key that you're trying to do is to just have it fail for very, very little time, mm-hmm. or not noticeably. And in this case, it wasn't too bad.
So who won that bet?
I think it was our head back-end developer, who predicted.
He had an advantage, though, in what was going
to fail. So I think yes and no. I think partially he was going, yeah, I won, but it was my stuff that broke. So he wasn't actually that happy about it, I think. But it's fine, right? It's just you always start testing and trying to increase capabilities. It's actually a great opportunity from a development standpoint for the coders to be able to say, well, let's have a massive load test in a live situation that's doing real science and it's really cool and it matters. So it's really good to have that opportunity from that perspective.
So Pulsar Zoo was announced at 9:42, we were told. Mm-hmm,
yes.
And then the website traffic spiked. The programme finished, I think, about 10:30 in the evening.
Something like that.
What happened for the rest of the evening, and what time did you finally get to bed?
Right. So I should... Can I back up a half an hour? Because there was a fun moment there. Well, like, so this is my first time on a TV set of any kind.
Yeah.
And everybody's got all of these routines, and there's all this jargon flying around that I do not understand at all. And there was a moment when Chris, who announced the project, you know, who's the one who said pulsarhunters.org, and then he goes to the, what's it called, Back to Earth, the program that's after Stargazing Live, which is, he has to be live on camera for a half an hour, and at some point, they're going to say, Chris, how's it going? And he needs to know. So he said, well, you have to come in and hold up a number on a piece of paper, and you have to come in as late as possible because we want the most up-to-date numbers. But there's only a very specific time window when I will be able to just look for you, because there's one moment where we're going to go to a pre-recorded thing, and it's only 2 minutes long.
Wow.
Lucy Green's going to have a thing, and she's going to talk for 2 minutes. She's okay. So when you hear Lucy's voice and a pre-recorded thing, run. And he gave me the sheet of paper that was like, this is what the schedule is, but he just sort of casually flung it at me and said, here you go. And it's got a bunch of timings on it, but it doesn't... I said, can you just tell me, point at the clock and tell me what time? And he said, no, we don't know, because it's live TV. Things might change, whatever. In fact, this whole schedule might change. I was like, why did you give it to me then? And so there was a moment there where I was... And, of course, there's no Wi-Fi here, right? Because the thing I would ordinarily do would be just to go into the TV studio with my laptop and just hold up the laptop, but I can't do that. I have to have a tether. So so that was fun. I was sort of running between the rooms going, she's not on yet. Okay, go back, see what the number is. She's not on yet. Go back, see what the number is. So that was fun. And then once it finished, I mean, Chris had said, again, go to pulsarhunters.org.
Yeah.
And then so we got another spike in traffic when that happened. And the developers went, oh, my God, it's so much on the server. So we spent most of the first part of that night just trying to make sure everything was going to stay up and marveling at how fast the classifications were coming in.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, what happened was at first the database sort of, it fell behind. It was so busy doing the work of recording the classifications that it wasn't telling us how many it had.
Mm.
So I am continually amazed by, this is going to sound random, I'm continually amazed by how difficult it is to find the distance to anything in the Milky Way. Right?
Mm-hmm.
It's not intuitive that that would be much, much more difficult than finding the distance to another galaxy.
Yeah.
But of course it is, and I understand why, etc. But likewise, I'm sometimes amazed by how difficult it is to just find out the size of the database. Right? How is it that hard? But when the database is really overloaded, that's actually not an easy question when it's changing very quickly, etc. So we thought there was a fairly low classification rate, and then once the database started to report everything we'd had, it started going up really, really fast.
Wow.
And so then we started to realize, okay, we actually are going to hit our target of a million classifications.
Yeah.
So we went from going, oh my God, what's happening? And sort of, is this going badly? And then very quickly just going, oh no, this is actually going really, really well. And they're finding things, and talk is up, and everybody's on talk and discussing the candidates and things. And so we ended up, in the bar at the hotel where all the crew is staying. And I had my laptop, and Chris was going around with his laptop and going, look what we think we might have found. And everybody kept checking in and seeing how it was going.
That's
and
great.
Yeah, and I guess we closed the bar. I don't really remember what time it was at that point.
You closed the bar. Keep dry.
Yeah. They ran out of normal tonic.
Oh, no.
I had to drink Slimline tonic. I mean, the sacrifices I make for science, really. So it was fine. So by that point, we knew that we have data. We probably have enough data to do something. We thought that if there was a candidate that came out really, really clearly, that we could send that to the people here and they could observe it overnight if it was up.
Mm-hmm.
But that didn't quite work out with coordinates and the sources and stuff. So fine. We said, okay, we'll run the aggregation stuff and we'll just do it in the morning. So the team in Oxford, who they'd been up with us and were all in their office kind of huddled around their computers, they ran all this stuff that I had needed them to send the data to me.
Mm-hmm.
And then they went to sleep. And then I theoretically set the code running and went to sleep, but then of course I couldn't sleep. because I kept going, oh, you know what, I need to do this thing, and oh, I forgot this, and I should set this up so that it's done by 7:30 because there's a script meeting and they want to know what's been found and stuff. So I think I went to bed at 5. I'm not really sure.
And you were back here at Jodrell Bank by...
Oh, well, I was up by 7:30, but we sort of then had a series of, like, must do this, must do this, must do this, so we couldn't deal with the, like, half-hour bus ride or, you know, whatever, to get here. Even though it's massively better to be here because the wired Ethernet is very, very fast compared to the hotel Wi-Fi, not great. Yeah. So I actually didn't even get here till lunch because then I was so busy catching up on what had been done and what I needed to do and organizing stuff.
So day 2 of Stargazing Live 2016 is going out tonight.
Yes.
What will you be doing?
So it's a good question, and it depends on what the broadcast is going to do. I don't think we found out yet. This thing about live TV, they just... I mean, they script as much of it as they can, but to some extent they have to make it up as they go along. Exactly.
So you may well be placed on athletic duties again.
It's possible. You know, it's possible I'm going to be one of those people in the back of the room that is just a prop as a person, because that's happened in previous years, although I don't think that'll happen today. It's possible we'll be trying to observe a source. Mm. And so in that case, I might be running in and like feeding coordinates to Chris again. And it's entirely possible that we're going to put in totally new data because I think we heard that there might be a new source of data as well. So we might have another set from which to discover pulsars. So that would be cool. If that's the case, then we're going to be like, oh, we have to get the data into the database right now. Yeah. Like, right, we should already be doing it.
Yeah.
And so that might be a bit mad. But it'll probably be the same type of thing. I'm refining the scripts that we're using to detect things, and sure. I'll be running those.
Are you guys ready for another big spike whenever it gets mentioned on air? Or?
Well, so we think we know what went wrong yesterday, right? The small thing. And so we're just waiting for the next thing, whatever that will be. Yeah. I think the funniest thing about this is that part of the reason it broke is that this classification is pretty easy. And so people can do it really quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And so you just get a lot more classifications per second than for other projects. And that's a pretty heavy load. But that's good, right? Because it means the project is a success. Yeah.
So do you expect us to have a brand new pulsar discovered by this evening?
Oh, I wouldn't like to predict. I wouldn't like to predict, because who knows? We've got a lot of candidates to go through, so I am really hoping. And I think based on the statistics, my understanding is that there is an expectation we might find a few.
Yeah.
So let us hope that we are average in terms of the statistics, right? And we find a few. Yeah. And I will hold out a sort of very distant hope for Brian's wish of finding a pulsar orbiting a black hole.
That would be very cool.
Very
much like that.
Yeah, you never know. We discovered a really, really cool planet the year that Planet Hunters was on Stargazing Live, so we never know.
Nobel Prize might be yours.
Oh, they wouldn't give it to me. I'm just the data monkey.
We'll have to try and get your reaction there once the pulsar has been found, because we're positive.
That's right.
We're optimistic on the job.
You stand there with the microphone, and I can go, oh, no, beep, beep, beep. I'm too sleep deprived, see?
Oh, yeah. Well, join the club. Well, Brooke, thanks very much for joining us on the Jobcast.
I hope you
have a successful night.
Me too, and you too. I hope we all do.
You turn up for work tomorrow here somewhat less sleep deprived.
Sure, that's likely.
Thanks very much.
Cheers.
Thanks.